On Christmas Eve, the sky was overcast and threatened rain. Mary leant out of the window, and the soft, wet wind blew upon her face. In an hour's time, Jem Merlin would be waiting for her on the moor to take her to Launceston Fair. Whether she met him or not depended upon herself, and she could not make up her mind. Something inside her responded to him. It nagged at her and would not let her be. She knew she would have to see him again. She waited on the high ground above Rushyford, and in the distance she saw the little cavalcade approach her, the pony, the jingle, and two horses tethered behind. Jem whistled as he approached her and flung a small package at her feet.
A happy Christmas to you. I had a silver piece in my pocket yesterday and it burnt an hole. There's a new handkerchief for your head.
She climbed into the cart beside him.
So you're going to sell two ponies at the fair, then? Double profit, Mary Ellen, and you shall have a new dress if you help me. Don't smile and shrug your shoulder. What's the matter with you? Your colour is gone. You've no light in your eyes. Don't lie to me, Mary. I'm not as blind as you think. What's happened at Jamaica Inn?
They jogged along in silence. She glanced down at his hands. They had the same strength, the same grace as his brother's. She realized that aversion and attraction ran side by side. The thought was an unpleasant one. Jem was too like his brother. His eyes and his mouth and his smile. That was the danger of it, and she realized why Aunt Patience had made a fool of herself 10 years ago. It would be easy enough to fall in love with Jem Merlin. His voice broke in upon her thoughts.
Are you going to tell me, or do you want me to guess?
There's no mystery in it. You asked me last time we met if I knew why my aunt looked like a living ghost. Well, I know now, that's all.
Jem watched her with curious eyes.
When your brother gets drunk, he finds his memory, talks to himself. This time he was not alone. I happened to be there when he woke from his dreams.
The pony picked up his feet and broke into a trot.
What are you going to do about it?
Mary hadn't made up her mind. There were gaps in the story, and Jem fitted remarkably well into some of them.
So you think I wreck ships and stand on the shore and watch men drown? Oh, it makes a pretty picture. I tell you one thing, Mary Ellen, and you can believe it or not. I've never killed a man. Yet.
He looked down at her, half contemptuous, half amused.
If she didn't believe him, he asked, why did she ride with him to Launceston?
For the sake of your bright eyes, Jem Merlin.
And she met his glance without a tremor. He laughed at that and shook his head and fell to whistling again. Away from the shadow of Jamaica Inn, Mary's natural youth and her spirits returned. By the time they clattered into Launceston at 2:30 in the afternoon, Mary had thrown trouble and responsibility to the winds and had melted to Jem's mood. There was an infection in the air caught from the sound and bustle of the town, a sense of excitement and well-being, a sense of Christmas. The streets were thronged with people. There was colour and life and movement. The cheerful crowd jostled one another before the market stalls. Turkeys and geese scratched at the wooden barrier that penned them. They stabled the pony and jingle at the top of the town, and Jem pushed his way through the crowd, leading his two stolen horses, making straight for the main square, where the whole of Launceston gathered, and the booths and tents of the Christmas fair stood end to end. There was a place roped off from the fair for the buying and selling of livestock, and the ring was surrounded by farmers and country gentlemen. Jem wore his hat at the back of his head. He looked cool and unperturbed. Presently a flashy-looking dealer thrust his way through the crowd and crossed over to the horses and was joined by a little lynx-eyed man in a black coat. Jem puffed at his pipe.
"This black pony here, you can't fault him. Look at those shoulders. There's breeding for you. I'll take 18 guineas for him.
The dealer hesitated and offered 15. The lynx-eyed man plucked at his sleeve and whispered in his ear. The dealer pulled a face and then he nodded.
All right. You've got an eye for trouble. You can keep your pony. Take my advice. Come down on your price. If you have him on your hands for long, you'll be sorry.
And he elbowed his way through the crowd. No one came near the black pony again. At 4:15, Jem sold the other horse for £6 to a cheerful, honest-looking farmer. Twilight gathered in the market square and the lamps were lit. Mary was thinking of returning to the jingle when she turned and saw a lady in a feathered hat and a blue velvet cape. She was admiring the black pony. The woman gave a little trill of laughter.
"It would be such a good Christmas present for the children. They've plagued poor Roger ever since Beauty disappeared. Ask him the price, James."
25 guineas, said Jem promptly. "He's promised to a friend. I'm not anxious to sell him."
The lady swept into the ring.
"I've set my heart on him. I'll give you 30 for him. I'm Mrs. Bassett from North Hill. My groom shall fetch the pony immediately and ride him back home."
Jem swept off his hat and bowed low.
"Thank you, madam. I hope Squire Bassett will be pleased with your bargain. You will find the pony exceedingly safe with children."
She made her way towards the coach, her petticoats fluttering behind her. Jem gave a 5-shilling piece to a lad to wait and hand over the pony to the groom when he appeared. Then he was off in a moment, walking hard across the square. Mary followed, a discreet 10 paces behind. The laughter bubbled up inside her, and she hid her mouth in her shawl.
"Jem, Merlin, you deserve to be hanged," she said when she had recovered herself. "To sell that stolen pony back to Mrs. Bassett herself. You have the cheek of the devil."
He threw back his head and laughed, and she could not resist him. Their laughter echoed in the street until people turned to look at them, and they too smiled and broke into laughter. Jem caught at her hand and crumpled the fingers.
"You're glad you came now, aren't you?" he said.
And she was. They plunged into the thick of the fair. Jem bought Mary a crimson shawl and gold rings for her ears. They sucked oranges beneath a striped tent and had their fortunes told by a wrinkled gypsy woman.
"Beware of a dark stranger," she said to Mary,
and they looked at one another and laughed again.
"There's blood in your hand, young man," she told Jem. "You'll kill a man one day."
She remembered what he had told her in the jingle that morning. He was innocent. Did she believe him now? Jem dragged Mary under cover of a doorway, his arms around her shoulders, and he turned her face against him and held her with his hands and kissed her. The rain came and the wind rose in gusts. Jem shielded Mary from the weather. She felt the tips of his fingers on her neck, travelling to her shoulders, and she put up her hands and pushed them away.
"I've made a fool of myself long enough for one night, Jem Merlin. It's time we thought of returning."
"You don't want to ride an open jingle in this wind. We'll be blown over on the high ground. We'll have to spend the night together in Launceston."
"Very likely.
Come and fetch the pony, Jem. I'll wait for you here." "Don't be a Puritan, Mary. You'll be soaked to the skin on the Bodmin Road. Pretend you're in love with me, can't you? You'd stay with me then. If I kissed you again, would you change your mind?"
"I would not."
He bowed his head against the rain, and she saw him disappear around the corner. Mary waited, stamping her feet and blowing upon her hands. The long minutes passed, and still he did not come. Somewhere a clock struck 8. He had been gone over half an hour, and the place where the pony and Jingle were stabled was only 5 minutes away. At last Mary could stand it no longer, and she set off up the hill in search of him. She came to the stable where they had left the pony and Jingle, but it was empty. The fellow who had admitted them to the shed earlier told her that Jem had left in a great hurry some 20 minutes ago with one of the servants from the White Hart. Mary retraced her steps in the direction of the town. What should Jem want with one of the servants from the White Hart? In the bar, Mary recognized the dealer and the little lynx-eyed man. She was aware of a sudden sense of foreboding, and turned at once for the door, but the lynx-eyed man was there before her.
"If it's the dour gypsy fellow you're looking for, I can tell you about him," he said, smiling wide, showing a row of broken teeth.
Jem had been in the company of a gentleman, he told her, and although he tried to resist, he was persuaded, with their help, to enter a carriage. He pulled a face of mock pity.
"No doubt you knew what became of the black pony. The price he was asking was undoubtedly high."
So the worst had happened, and the theft of the pony had been discovered. Did they hang men for that as well as murder? For the moment, she was stunned. If she had consented to stay in Launceston, this would never have happened. They would have found a room in the town somewhere. She would have been beside him now, and they would have loved one another. She went away down the road, driven like a leaf before the wind, with the mizzling rain driving in her face, caring little where she went, and careless of the fact that 11 long miles lay between her and her bedroom at Jamaica Inn. Then, out of the darkness, she saw a carriage crawling up the hill towards her. It looked like a beetle, stubby and black. She watched it with dull eyes. The sight conveyed no message to her brain, except that somewhere, on an unknown road, Jem Merlin travelled to his death, perhaps by the same manner. The carriage had crept up to her and was passing by before she ran towards it on an impulse and called to the driver. He whipped his horse on, but before Mary could step aside, an arm came out of the carriage window, and a hand was laid on her shoulder.
"What does Mary Yellen do alone in Launceston on Christmas Eve?" said a voice from within.
The hand was firm, but the voice was gentle. A pale face stared at her from the dark interior of the carriage. White hair and white eyes beneath the black shovel hat. It was the Vicar of Altenham.
"So we ride together for a second time."
His voice was soft and low, like the voice of a woman.
"Once more I have the good fortune to help you by the wayside."